Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Mary Eberstadt. Mary is a research fellow at the Hoover Institution, consulting editor to Policy Review, and contributing writer to First Things. She has written widely for these and other magazines and newspapers, including The Weekly Standard, The American Spectator, Commentary, The Los Angeles Times, The London Times, The Wall Street Journal, and the online journal thecatholicthing.org. Her previous books are Home Alone America and the anthology Why I Turned Right, Leading Baby Boom Conservatives Chronicle Their Political Journey. I had the opportunity to speak with Mary Eberstadt at the Catholic Marketing Network Conference in Philadelphia. We're going inside the pages of The Loser Letters, a comic tale of life, death, and atheism. A wickedly witty satire, The Loser Letters chronicle the conversion of a young adult Christian to atheism, with modern humor rivaling that of the media lampooning Onion. Found on college campuses all over America, Eberstadt's lovable and articulate tragic comic heroine, A.F. Christian's open letters to the spokesman of the new atheism explain her reasons for rejecting God and the logical consequences that follow that choice. Along the way, she offers pithy advice to well-known contemporary atheists such as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, with the hope of helping them win over Christians. Among the many current books arguing for or against religion, social critic and writer Mary Eberstadt's book is truly unique, a black comedy about theism and atheism that is simultaneously a rollicking defense of Christianity. Published by Ignatius Press, with special excerpts from the book read by Kathleen McGregor. Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
The work that you've done on The Loser Letters, A Comic Tale of Life, Death, and Atheism, is exceptional in its presentation. There's nothing quite like it out there, especially in addressing the new atheism.
Well, thank you for that. That was what I was aiming for. I wanted to deliver Christian apologetics in a form that hasn't been used well in a long time, I think, and that is the form of satire. And the specific reason why I wanted to do this was that I was trying to reach young people, especially young adults. Essentially, The Loser Letters is apologetics for the Facebook generation.
Perfect. What inspired you to take this particular track? I mean, was there a person or a particular instance that said, boy, this is what's needed?
Well, it was partly inspired by, of course, loosely by C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. The Screwtape Letters, with its incomparable combination of humor and serious orthodox apologetics, was part of what got me thinking that maybe a newer version of that might be useful now. But mainly, the book was inspired by the new atheists themselves, because when I sat down and read their books, and of course I'm talking about our celebrity atheists, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, in France Michel Onfray, Victor Stanger, Daniel C. Dennett, and a few other people, when I sat down and actually read their books, of course I realized there were some pretty big common holes in their arguments, but it also seemed as if they were missing something. And what they were missing is that, face it, you know, atheism and secularism have been gaining ground for a long time now. And we now live in a world where, if not belligerent atheism, at least rampant secularism is a fact of life. And the world looks like a pretty different place than it did when Christian ideas had more influence than they do now. And there's been a pretty impressive, in the bad sense, accumulating empirical record of what happens when you have secularism and not Christianity being dominant in the culture. And what happens, just to name a few things in part, are broken homes, less giving to charity, all kinds of negative fallout from the sexual revolution, a lot easier predatory behavior by males on young women. And all of these elements go into my story because these are all factual realities that I felt like were being glossed over by the new atheists, and it seemed fair to call this record up in answering their arguments.
What's so compelling and actually such a wonderful joy to be able to read this. As a 48-year-old woman, I looked at it and I thought, wow, this is something different. But as you said, you were writing for the Facebook generation, the same generation that will watch comedy programs that claim the mantle as news organizations, i.e. The Daily Show or things like that. It's a way of responding to that generation that's used to using satire.
Yes, thank you for understanding that. That's very important because people under, say, 30 are far more steeped in that kind of irony than most of us understand, and they respond to it, and that's why they like, say, The Daily Show. This book is an attempt to use that same kind of humor as a medium for scoring points against the new atheists and in favor of Christianity. And the response I've seen from young people so far has been very positive because, again, they swim in that same sea of irony and sarcasm. That's not to say that the book can't be read by other people. I certainly hope and think it can. Mm-hmm. But the particular vernacular of it is that kind of irony to which kids, young adults especially, respond so well.
Yeah, there has been a response by the Christian community to the new atheism, but as you have pointed out, and it's really obvious in that response, it's all tailored for an over 30 generation who likes to read down the proof texting and go out and do argumentation. But again, that's not when we look at who is embracing this, especially from the cultural perspective, it is the young.
Yes, and I'm very aware of that. My husband and I have some young adults and teenagers, and I'm surrounded by them in various ways, lots of those people. And so I'm especially aware, I think, that there is a reason why young people respond to the new atheists. To their credit, the new atheists are very forward about what they believe. They're very confident, confident to the point of being belligerent. But young people respond to that because they don't want the authority figures to be milquetoast. So when some bunch of people like the new atheists come along with a very confident, if aggressive, message about how they see the world, there's a certain amount of just natural attraction that has for young people. One thing that I wanted to do with this book was get across the idea that, you know, all the IQ points are not in the atheist corner, and if you look at Christian history, you see quite a bit of proof of that. And all the confidence isn't in the atheist corner either, because it takes a certain amount of confidence to tell a joke. Mm-hmm. And that was another reason why I wanted the book to be a humorous book, because it's a way of showing people that it's not just the new atheists who believe in what they're doing here.
We who will now be termed the older generation, I can't believe I'm in that category, but have we lost our sense of humor?
Great question. I can think of some great satirists, P.J. O'Rourke and Tom Wolfe and a bunch of younger writers. I don't think it's gone. It may be a little bit in hiding, partly because, face it, it's getting increasingly tough to stand in the public square and wave your hand and say, I'm a believer. And I hear from kids on college campuses that on some campuses it's practically impossible. Secularism and this new atheism have had a clear, chilling effect. And it's not that we can't make jokes, it's just that there is an increasing reluctance to step forward and be confident about what believers believe.
Let's talk about your... I want to call her a protagonist. I'm not sure if it's an antagonist or it's just the irascible AF Christian who is just seeking so much, she wants truth so bad, doesn't she?
Yes, and you can call her a protagonist because AF Christian is a protagonist. The book is told from her point of view. She's a very bubbly, worldly 20-something girl whose story unfolds in the course of these letters that she writes to the new atheists. And I made her a girl for various reasons, but part of it is because it's so much easier, I think, to capture a girl's enthusiasm. And she's a very enthusiastic character, if a somewhat wayward character. Her name is A.F. Christian, not because that's her real name, but because A.F. stands for a former Christian. Mm-hmm. And in addressing these letters to the new atheists, she wants to tell them her own personal conversion story to atheism. And that's why she signs her letters with AF, a former Christian.
Dear sirs, speaking just for this atheist convert, congratulations, guys. You really did it. Thanks to all your hard work, the rest of us who know once and for all that the so-called God, that loser, is everything you say he is. The biggest fraud of all time, cosmic zero, ultimate no-show, and after all those centuries and promises too. It's like throwing the biggest rave ever, only to cancel it at the last minute after everyone already bought tickets and drugs for it. What kind of deity does that anyways? If this were Facebook, no one would be friending him now. But you have to admit, that same loser sure has been great for the book business, including and especially all those books on the new atheism, I'm happy to say. Almost 1 million volumes sold in 12 months' time, covers in every major newspaper and magazine, publicity on all the best talk shows and websites and campuses, national and international book awards up the wazoo, talk about knowing how to make something, cha-ching, out of nothing, loser. Is it really marvelous? Sorry, I almost said miraculous there. I'm new to the atheist party and hope you'll pardon any slips. How your ideas have taken so much of the Western media by storm. You'd almost think atheism had friends in some pretty high places. Whatever, you probably think we atheists have earned the right to sit back and chill. I mean, it's pretty clear we've won by now, isn't it? Except, well, maybe not. And that's why I'm writing you this letter, because there's one thing that's still missing from atheism's final victory, and it's something that just can't be sugarcoated. Apart from me, where is the testimony of anyone your writings have actually convinced? After all, as one of you had said somewhere, and all of us want to believe, if this book works as I intend, religious readers will be atheists when they put it down. So, where are the rest of them, I'm starting to wonder, these other converts, like me, to the new godlessness? I'm not asking about the numbers to depress any of you. One of the things I love about our side, the winning side, the atheist side, is we get that it's good enough just being in everyone's face about God not existing, even if no one but me was persuaded, despite a few million more books in circulation. And I know that it wouldn't be the first time that atheism fell short on the convert count. It appears to me, whether rightly or wrongly, as our most illustrious forebear, Charles Darwin, once put it, that direct arguments against Christianity and theism produce hardly any effect on the public. And he should certainly know. Even so, as your convert, in fact, maybe your one and only convert, I worry for us. Sooner or later, one of the believers will come along and point out a fact that he'll think is damaging to this new atheism. I mean that it hasn't actually convinced anyone. In other words, he's going to paint our side as somehow intellectually unfit. And the idea of being called unfit to this newly minted atheist is just too much to bear. Back when I was a Christian, I was taught to embrace those kinds of people. You know what I mean? The maladaptives. But as an atheist, even a new one, I've learned to despise them all as nature's mistakes. Being put on the losing side would be what you might call a personal de-evolution for me, something gross and unnatural, like having an opposable thumb and not even texting with it. And so, to protect us atheists from that charge before our religious enemies even get to it, I've decided to write the following letters to you. They offer up the earnest confession of one who, as someone who once said of our fellow atheist Allen Ginsberg, did not come back from hell empty-handed. I mean, hell figuratively, of course. Little joke there. But seriously, I have ascended from the darkness of the believers by clinging to each and every one of your words. And I bring with me recent first-hand knowledge of them and their ways that I want to share with you.
Yeah, she takes on every different venue of culture. I mean, everything from art to just topics of morality that we address today.
Yeah, so her mind is a kind of brain soup, you know, the way it is when you spend a couple of hours a day on Facebook and you're texting all the time and you're 25 years old and you have boyfriend problems and substance abuse problems and other kinds of problems that come up in the course of the book. But also her mind bubbles incessantly with this question of who is right, the atheists or the believers. And at times she gets into some pretty sophisticated arguments. For example, she tells the new atheists, if you want more people to believe the way we do, then you've got to do the best you can to ignore the entire aesthetic record of Christian history or of religious history generally. You have to ignore the fact that all the greatest art has been created in the name of God or the gods. And she walks through a kind of thumbnail sketch of Western civilization that way. It's not meant to be heavy lifting. You can read the book and not understand a single reference, although I hope and trust that most readers will understand the references. But you don't need to get the references to follow the plot. What she's doing is testing the new atheists in one area after another to get to the bottom of this question of who is right. And so there's one chapter on aesthetics, and then there's another one that takes on the question of who does more good works, believers or non-believers. There's a lot of interesting empirical work on that one. And the answer is that if you have a religious creed that tells you to take care of the poor and the weak, then empirically speaking, you're a lot more likely to do that than if you don't have such a creed. And I use perfectly secular empirical, you know, social science to get into that. So in one way and another, she is taking on the whole world because she is desperate to settle this question of who is right, the atheists or the believers.
In short, I offer to you my own conversion story, that of a former Christian who's adapted at last to atheism. It's a personal tale, by the way, not a point-by-point engagement with all of your arguments and themes. After all, I'm no theologian, and neither are any of you, of course. But before getting into all that, I'll start at the beginning, by explaining what kept me, and not only me, but a great many other potential converts for our side, away from atheism for so long. Above all, I want my letters to be useful. I've read what Marxist-Leninist atheists had to say back before they all went to wherever all the Marxist-Leninist atheists went after 1989. And I do have to confess, at times I really miss their verve, don't you? Especially their sense of how the highest purpose is to be useful. Well, I think the most useful thing I can do here is to show you something of how the dolls really think from the inside, so you can see just what we're truly up against in trying to convert them. Just think of me as your own private project runway or what not to wear. Someone who just wants us atheists to be all we can be. I do hope everyone reads my story of personal evolution through. After all, it's the only one you have, at least so far. But don't let the numbers bother you much. One down, and just a few billion more to go. Your huge fan, AF, a former Christian.
She's a fascinating character. I'm not going to ask a silly question, but I just see her with glasses. Just absolutely, she studies so hard, and she so earnestly wants to believe in something, so much to the fact that she is a convert to the new atheism, which is supposed to be about no belief, but yet it is a belief.
Yes. Does she wear glasses? That's a great question. I hadn't thought about that. I would think she does wear glasses, but she takes them off whenever her boyfriend Lobo comes into the room.
I love that. I love that. Part of the beauty of this particular book, again, is because it is essentially apologetics, but it's done with satire in that line of C.S. Lewis. And I just have to wonder, have that background in writing this, did you look to Lewis a lot, or is this something, again, that I can't even imagine what it was like to try to get into A.F. Christian's mind.
C.S. Lewis, again, was loosely the inspiration, but the tone and characters are, of course, vastly different. I first had the idea of writing this as a long essay. I had the idea that the one thing missing in the whole current debate about atheism and theism was humor. And so I had early on the idea of trying to write a humorous essay, kind of poking fun at the seriousness with which the new atheists take themselves. Because, you know, their books are very dry and sour reads for the most part. These guys lack for a sense of humor, so much so that it almost makes you wonder whether they really believe everything they say. So early on, I had the idea of doing an essay along these lines, but the more I read and took notes, the clearer it was that actually there were so many problems with the arguments they were putting out that I had the stuff not of one letter, but of 10, and, you know, not of an essay, but of a whole book. So they handed me the material, and I just worked with what they gave me.
That's what's the irony in all of this, is that the Christians are called the dulls, when in actuality, as you just described, the atheists are actually have the more dull perspective.
Yes, I use that word, the dulls, capital D, to refer to the Christians, because long before the new atheists, I believe this originated with Bertrand Russell, the atheists have been running around calling themselves the brights, capital B. And, you know, that's just one example of the sort of condescension that you find in their writing. I'd also like to stress for the audience, I'm not talking about your garden variety atheists here. I am talking about the people who have been rolling all these best-selling books off the presses, and the celebrity atheists, you know, the people who are really making a living off this. And to a man, that is, there are almost no women atheists, as, you know, we also get into in the book, because I think that's a fascinating thing. To a man, their books are kind of like what they say about the religious believers, self-righteous, historically ill-informed, and humorless. And that's why you could write a satire of this stuff, because the material was right there in the books themselves.
Yeah, I think as you begin to see A.F. Christian, as she has converted to their thinking, it's almost a romanticized version of what she believes the atheists and their motivations are. And maybe that's a reflective of what the appeal to so many, as you pointed out before, who are seeking some type of foundation in something.
Yes. Generally speaking, I think, you know, the believers, especially Christian believers, operate at a disadvantage, which is when faced with this kind of belligerent secularism, their instinct is to turn the other cheek, because that's what we're told, is to turn the other cheek. But the problem with that is that if you're out there playing defense all the time, and the other side is playing offense all the time, you are going to lose. And that includes in the public square, in this matter of religion. And that's why, again, it felt necessary to push back a little harder. Now, this is not a mean book. It's not personal about any of the new atheists. I don't know any of the new atheists. It's only about their ideas. But it did seem that it was past time to put some offense back in there, and that's again where the humor comes in, because humor is essentially an offensive weapon.
And the glories of this as well is that it not only is for, as we described earlier, the Facebook generation, but also it gives back to those the older generation, that joy in satire and our belief that there's that virtue, that joy in our faith, that we can do this without being belligerent, as you said, and without being cruel.
Yes, I certainly hope so. I like your use of the word joy. I think that's important. This is, although a sad story in many ways, essentially a joyful book. Mm-hmm. It's a book about redemption and about believing in things, and it's a stab in the dark against the kind of nihilism that the new atheists stand for. You know, religious believers have to get out of the habit of thinking that we can be easily mocked. I mean, I suppose we can be easily mocked, but the fact that we can be easily mocked doesn't mean that the other side can't too. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to get down to a contest of who believes the more ridiculous things, then I think it's fair to say, well, let's tease out some of the consequences of atheism. For example, record millions killed during the totalitarianism of the 20th century. And if we're going to play body count, then they can have the Inquisition. I'm not defending everything about the Inquisition here. But, you know, the body count there looks a little bit less than the body count of self-consciously atheistic regimes in Germany, in China, in Cambodia, and other places in the 20th century, to say nothing of the Soviet Union, which probably had the biggest body count of all, and was also run by, of course, self-consciously atheist ideologues. Mm-hmm. Now, am I saying that all atheists are up to creating a gulag archipelago or a Holocaust? No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if you want to look at the record and you want to start talking about who's done the most harm to mankind or who's been most toxic, a phrase that the new atheists like to throw around, it seems fair to enter into that calculus what actually happened in the 20th century when self-consciously atheist regimes were in power.
Mm-hmm. It's an extraordinary work, needed so much in this time. I'm hoping that there's plans for more.
Well, thank you very much. We'll see where A.F. Christian goes from here.
I keep wondering if she ever receives a response.
It's an interesting question. I suspect if there aren't royalties involved, then probably not. Probably not, but I don't mean to sound like too much of a cynic. Of the responses that I've gotten to the book, my favorite so far was an email from someone I don't know who wrote in to say, Dear Ms. Debersat, I want you to know that I've been an atheist all my adult life, but after reading your letters, I'm starting to reconsider. And that was a very touching response because, you know, he didn't say, I've been convinced by one short and hopefully funny book to change the way I think about the world, but he did say it had made him think, and that's what I really want, is for this book to make people think.
Yeah, I have to believe just in, maybe it's the maternal nurturer in me, but as A.F. Christian matures and she continues to think, that she will think herself out of the new atheism at some point. And towards that great journey from her head down to her heart, where she'll go back and read her own letters and convince herself of what the truth is.
She's a very complicated girl, but I have confidence that it'll turn out all right for her.
Oh, Mary Eberstadt, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. It was great. Thank you.
We've been going inside the pages of Mary Eberstadt's book, The Loser Letters, a comic tale of life, death, and atheism, with special excerpts read by Kathleen McGregor. Mary's book can be found at IgnatiusPress.com or at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, please visit www.InsideThePages.com. I'm Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.